This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station.
Good afternoon and welcome to Health and Living. I am Meera Sivasuthi. If you follow us every month, Dr. Rajini Sarvanandan, our consultant developmental pediatrician, usually comes in, and she's here again in the month of June for her show. Just made it before July this Sunday, Dr. Rajini. How are you today?
Fine, thank you, Meera.
Today we're going to be talking about rotten and rude children. I think many of us can relate to that. For those of us who have children, it's a modern life now. You have technology. The way we have brought up our children, we're spending less time with them. How much are we role modeling as far as manners is concerned? A lot of questions I always ask myself, rather than to blame the children for being rude. But if you have a question for her, give us a call. The number is 03-77-109-000. You can tweet BFM Radio or WhatsApp 018-789-8899. What are your observations, Dr. Rajini, as far as children are today in terms of manners and respect for their elders?
Well, I think, you know, we don't just look at children, but if you look at adults, and classic example on the road, I think we can see that, manners have deteriorated rapidly. And there's no surprise then that that's also being mirrored in children, because essentially we are role models for our children.
Yeah. And when children interact, do you think they're different? They're interacting differently today as opposed to in the past?
I think a lot of the research shows that studies have shown that children are different. Ways in which they use language may be different, and there's less face-to-face communication time within families, essentially where children pick up a lot of their skills, their manners, their social skills. And as such, I think we do see that now a lot more children have issues when it comes to social interaction in terms of how they communicate with peers and adults as well.
Okay, but does that necessarily translate to them being rude or, you know, disrespectful, really?
Not necessarily. I think, you know, sometimes we also have to remember that, you know, especially when we're dealing with toddlers and preschoolers, there's sometimes this expectation that, you know, children should learn to behave and that it comes naturally. And in speaking to many parents, when especially when we do talks and things like that in public forums, you sort of hear comments like, my child just can't sit still, or my child starts yelling, we have to ask ourselves why our children are behaving this way. Children are not born as well-mannered individuals who learn to sit and have exemplary manners and behaviours. They need to be moulded and guided to develop these skills as well.
Are they necessarily born self-centred?
If you think about a baby who's just been born, innately all of us have this need to ensure that we have enough food and that, you know, we have enough rest, and so, you know, a baby will start screaming for his milk when he's hungry, or a baby will scream if he feels cold, so that somehow or other these feelings are then satisfied either through feeding or, you know, an adult picking him up and things like that. So it's how you tend to the infant that also determines what sort of toddlers they're going to become, and that goes on through the years as well.
So where are we going wrong, or are we making mistakes as babies, you mentioned? The natural instinct is to pick them up and feed them, do that sort of thing.
Yes.
So when are we making that mistake of starting to back off and not make them the center of the universe, and then, you know, then have issues around that?
Yeah, so, you know, we start with parenting an infant. Yes, you want to make sure that they're fed, that they're warm, that they're comfortable, they have enough sleep. But in doing so, we should also be mindful of the fact that we're not overdoing it. So overdoing it in the sense that you feed them on the clock without them having to feel hungry and ask for food in the form of crying. You sort of have everything ready. So the minute the baby starts to whimper before they get to the cry, the bottle is stuffed in the mouth or the baby's at the breast already. So that sort of waiting, being able to learn to self-regulate themselves, you know, is lost if you just rush in there. And, you know, some of those self-regulation skills are very important when we start talking about how they develop language and manners and the whole social skills and empathy.
So what you're saying is wait for them, give them that space to react.
Yes.
And then you react.
Yes.
Don't anticipate and react before they react.
The need is there.
Okay. Yeah. All right. And when it comes to us as individuals, I mean, I'm sure you're parents and how they, you know, brought you up and how they brought me up is, you know, very different. Why is it we've given our children more leeway today when it comes to manners and rudeness and respect? Really, what went wrong?
That's a tough one, Mira. And I, you know, when Xiao Yik and Tina proposed this topic, I did a little bit of soul searching as well.
Yes.
You know, you know, I think how we parent now is slightly different to maybe how we were parented, in the sense that we probably have less in terms of boundaries, rules, consequences than how we were parented. You know, I can, you know, remember how we were made to behave when relatives visited.
Yes.
And, you know, if we did something wrong, we would get the look.
Mm-hmm.
And we knew when we got the look, that meant a consequence later.
Yeah.
And I think we have, as parents now, become less consistent in terms of how we parent our kids. And we essentially have become busier people in our own lives, that maybe we're neglecting a lot of the parenting that we should be doing, and that we're outsourcing it to other people, other carers, and possibly even to non-human means of babysitting, such
Absolutely.
As the screen time.
Yes, and I know you feel very strongly about that, but we'll come back mm-hmm. as to how screen time is interfering in mm-hmm. children developing proper manners and respect. But as individuals, as couples as well, how important is it for both a couple to actually be on the same page as to what respect means and what
yes.
manners is and
yes.
And what constitutes being rude.
Yes. Yes. And
yeah.
and I think that's something else, I guess, you know, in terms of how we are open we are with our children, to the point that sometimes probably arguments take place in front of them.
Yep.
And, you know, I was just reminded by my eldest daughter last night that, you know, hey, mom, you know, sometimes it's important that you and papa don't argue in front of the youngest,
mm-hmm.
Because we sometimes forget we have a youngest who is still barely a teenager. But yeah, sometimes I think in today's day and age, and if you even watch the sort of dramas that are coming through nowadays, you know, we grew up with the Waltons.
Mm-hmm.
Good night, John Boy. Good night, Ma. Good night,
oh,
Pa.
Yes.
Do you remember that?
Little House on the Prairie.
And if you watch the sitcoms nowadays, how different are they?
Yep.
So, you know, I think for our kids growing up in this world, you know, it's a different environment that they're in. And sometimes if you look at some teenagers, they may have come from homes where manners are very, very important. But just to fit in with their peers who may not be as well-mannered or be using the right or acceptable language to fit in, they feel the pressure of having to conform. And that, too, is another area that I think is something that affects especially our teenagers.
Mm-hmm. And we'll come back and find out whether it's ever too late to sort of instill good manners and to teach children to be more polite, because we can see it in the workforce already. with the younger generation and how they conduct themselves in meetings.
Yes.
Sometimes I'm thinking, should I open my mouth and say something that, you know, excuse me, you've been rude, you know.
Yeah.
I'm sometimes in conflict as to whether I should say anything or think that this is the future. Mm-hmm. And, you know, mm-hmm. be prepared for mm-hmm. it. But there has to be some sort of decorum in a meeting and how people conduct yeah. themselves, really. So to think about how your parenting style and what you're doing at home with your child is now eventually going to go out to the real world
yes.
and be a part of society yes. as a rude individual, even when the little things like when you reply an email, it
yes.
comes through.
That's
you know,
right.
I'm like this one-liners, one-word emails in response to your email. Says a lot about an individual,
yes.
you know. So
very much
it hits every level going forward. So we're discussing rude children, how important it is to learn manners and respect. I think one of the things Dr. Rajani has spoken about is how we as parents have become less consistent in how we are, you know, teaching them good manners. I mean, would you say role modeling is really the best way to instill good manners and respect, Dr. Rajani?
Well, you know, a lot of research shows that essentially when you talk about things like empathy and use of language, it's pretty much what that child hears and sees most of the day. And so definitely role modeling is very important. And I think this is something that we also need to look at in terms of what we expose our children to on screens, in terms of what is appropriate and what is not appropriate. And, you know, we're no longer just talking about role modeling in terms of what the parents do and say, but if you are also involving screen time, you also need to be mindful that whatever your child watches on screen, especially when they are young toddlers, they can't really quite differentiate what's real and what's not real. And if you're not there to model that for them, then their little brains, as it's developing, and the neurons as they are forming their little pathways, start to get a little bit confused.
Okay, we'll come back and find out more about screen time and technology. I know Dr. Rajani in the past has always spoken about how, you know, strongly you feel about, you know, our children being very attached to gadgets and how that's impacting not just their characters, but everything else, your
yes.
growth, your fine motor skills, your gross motor skills, yeah. everything as an individual. So we'll come back and continue that discussion. If you have a question for her, give us a call. The number is 0377 109000. You can tweet BFM Radio or WhatsApp 0187898899. Good afternoon and welcome to the show. I'm Meera Sevasodhi. In our Health and Living segment, Dr. Rajani Sarvanandan, our consultant developmental pediatrician, we're discussing manners and respect amongst our children. We spoke about the impact of screen time and how many of our children spend a lot of time in front of those gadgets. How does that impact, you know, the development of manners and respect, Dr. Rajani?
Well, if you look at a lot of cartoons and the language they use, I mean, you just have to listen to how kids pick up language.
But then the Roadrunner back in the day also didn't speak the best language, did he?
It didn't.
Neither did The Simpsons.
Neither did The Simpsons. But this is where the balance of you know, real life experiences with what we saw on screens was probably tipped more towards what we experienced in real life. So it's about balance, and hence why we say it's not that we're saying no screen time at all, but limit it and ensure that there is a balance in terms of real life social experiences for that child there, and especially a toddler and preschool children who are growing up and their brains are forming these networks. And we're not just talking about the networks important for learning, but, you know, also for socializing and language especially. So, you know, you just have to see little, you know, toddlers and the way they react sometimes when they see something exciting, they go, wowee, you know, the way they do it in the cartoons, or oh my god, you know, and you see these little exclamations. Now it looks cute, But that should start alerting you to the fact that, hey, how come they're not saying, ayo, the way grandma says it, you know, or mimicking the helper or, you know, the way you say it,
yes.
Like, you know, alama, or, you know, depending on what you say when something goes wrong.
Yep.
And, you know, if you start to hear more of TV language per se, I think that's telling you that already maybe your child's experiences are being molded by the screen. And if you look at cartoons and even the so-called educational programs, you know, everything is so fast-paced. And when you're talking about things like manners, reading into subtle social cues, picking up when someone is feeling sad, the way the cartoons and programs are made, the frames move so quickly. There's no pause. There's no waiting for a reaction. And so it's, you know, it's hard for a child to then pick up subtle things such as empathy and manners and or understand why those words are being used, mm-hmm. you know.
Why is it so important for our children to have manners and respect?
Well,
besides the fact that they'll annoy the rest of the world, but, you know, why else?
I think developing manners, you know, it's very much linked with empathy. And, you know, and you can tell a child who is well-mannered, and you can tell when a child's been programmed to say something in an automatic way. You know, the sort of thank you, but then grabbing it from you, as opposed to, oh, thank you, but waiting for you to put that item in your hand and taking it away slowly.
Like road learning manners.
Exactly. You know.
So interesting. Manners and empathy.
Yes.
Linked together.
Yes, very much so.
How is empathy tied to brain development?
So when we look at, you know, what do we mean by empathy? You know, empathy is when you start to perceive the other person's feelings and emotions, and you are able to relate to that and eventually respond in a manner that will hopefully help that person through their particular feelings. And, you know, if you look at how empathy develops in young children, by 2 years old, many children have already developed that feeling of empathy. And you have a look of surprise on your face.
Is it inborn? Is it something that can be nurtured?
It is something that can be nurtured. And this is where social experiences
I didn't
are
know
important.
This. 2 years.
Yes. And if you look at,
such
you know,
an important window, and I missed it.
You probably never noticed it. And then if you look at an 18-month-old, and if they hear another child crying, quite often they will cry along, okay? Because they understand that there's some distress going on there, but they're not sure how to react or to relate to it. But, you know, if a child has enough exposure, and she watches how mommy picks up the baby when the baby cries, or goes to the baby and says, wait, darling, mommy's going to get you the milk, and or you're crying, and starts to stroke the baby. If that 2-year-old has been exposed to that from a young age, that 2-year-old will know how to respond even. And you'll be amazed. You know, you just have to watch some 2-year-olds and how much empathy they exude. Now, some parents say to me, oh, but that's a girl thing. And it's completely not true. I have seen typically developing 2-year-old boys show that same empathy at 2 years old. But by the time they're 4, they're so into their guns and running around, you know, that they may not always demonstrate the empathy as often as the girls are. And that's partly to do with how we've maybe brought them up, or the type of games that they play. And
so what you're saying is after the age of 2, they could possibly change if there's no
right exposure, yeah, because that brain is still developing. And if you don't nurture it in the right way, we do know that they won't move on to the next step and you know, continue to develop the skills that are important in developing adult-type empathy.
Okay. Yeah. So what if you're a tough love kind of a mum, and then you know, you may come across as not having empathy. What will the children pick up then?
So it depends what else they're exposed to. You know, quite often in our society, it's not just the mum who's there. There's the dad. There's the grandma. So it depends. And of course, you know, we are all born with different personalities. Yeah. And that personality may influence how we react. But it doesn't mean that a tough love, you know, tough love means a child will be any less empathetic. You know, you talk about people who are firm and strict, but even people who are firm and strict have empathy mm-hmm. and demonstrate empathy.
Yep. Like, so. Think of your grandfather.
Exactly.
Yeah. Yeah. that was a different generation. We knew at the end of the day that they had a good heart.
Yes.
And you know, that they actually cared.
Yes.
It was just a front.
It was just a front. And because of the little moments that we remember them and how they reacted maybe in particular moments in our lives.
Okay. Yeah. If you have a question for Dr. Rajini, we're talking about manners and respect amongst our children. How, you know, how do you develop that side of them? Empathy, so important.
Yeah.
Going forward for children to develop. Is empathy something that is, you mentioned with screen time, is that also going to hinder the development of empathy?
Yeah. So, you know, it's very interesting. I came across an article, Mira, which looked at empathy scores, if I remember rightly, in university students. And this was over a period of 20 years between, I think, 1987 and 2007 in America. And they screened about 14,000 university students. And what they found, which was very interesting, is those students who entered university in that last decade compared to the first decade had lower empathy scores. And they sort of linked it to the increase in terms of, in those days it was TV time, I think in the late 80s, in the early 80s to the mid 80s in America, they started airing daytime TV programs and cartoons before they rapidly moved on to all-day TV channels. And they found that, you know, there was an actual drop in terms of empathy scores. They were more likely to be empathetic if they were born in the first 10 years between, you know, those who were born in the 70s. So they filled up the questionnaires in 1987. Then they were, if they were screened at 2007. Mm-hmm. And
I wouldn't want to know what the outcome would be
it'd
now.
It'd be interesting if, you know, they continued to that study. But,
yeah.
You know, and I think that sort of says it, you know. I think further along now, gosh, our kids don't just have the TVs, but the gadgets that move along with them.
Yeah.
So even on their travels, you know, children learn empathy and a lot of their social skills through real life experiences. We know that. If you look at the neurobiology of empathy per se, I mean, it's a lot of it's linked to something called mirror neurons. Mm-hmm. So what they found was that, the observer, if you look at the brain, when somebody is observing someone do something, their brains also are activated the same way as if they were doing it. So, you know, if you're looking at, say, empathy, so if you see someone crying and it's almost as though you are going through that experiences. And this is how we then start to make inferences on why that may have happened and how our actions should be. And one study showed that in children who spent time on the screen, somehow those mirror neurons are not activated as much. So, you know, when they're watching a screen program, it didn't seem to be activated as much as if it was a real life experience. So that was interesting as well.
So socialization is very important.
Very important.
Okay. Dennis, you have a question, Dennis. Go ahead.
Hi.
Hi.
My question is simply, if we didn't have parents who taught us empathy effectively growing up, how do we take a proactive approach perhaps to limit ourselves?
Okay, interesting. Thank you, Dennis.
So if we didn't have these experiences growing up, how do we learn it ourselves? We learn it, I think we also learn it by watching other people around us and how they react. What's interesting is people talk about, if I related to people on the autism spectrum, it's not true that children or even adults with autism don't have empathy. They do have empathy. It's just sometimes they don't know how to react in those situations. Mm-hmm. You know, these feelings are just so overwhelming, they don't know the right actions. So, but they can be taught through therapy, through going through social scenarios, etc. You can also learn, you can also teach children about feelings, about empathy, how to react, how to behave socially through different social modules that we have now. And one of them is social thinking, the many more. But we know that through role playing, we know that through interacting with friends, watching how other people may react, children also gain these social skills. And hence why we often say, you know, it's very important that children interact and mix with their peers, because there's a lot more to be learned from peers than there is from adults.
What about the typically developed adult? Can he or she develop empathy or learn it all over again, if you feel you're one who doesn't really have empathy, how do you develop that?
Yeah, so I think it's harder because you're having to relearn things, but it is possible, and hence why there you hear of what people do through motivational talks and how, so many of these courses online, right? How to go to an interview, how you perform in an interview. All these teach you the right things to say, the right ways to behave. They talk about body language. So it can be taught, but we know the adult brain isn't as neuroplastic or malleable as a child's brain is. So it is going to be harder, but it can be. And if there is a reason why that adult wants to learn these skills, it can be learned. And you and I, Mira, know about people who've managed to learn the right body language skills just to present themselves at an interview.
But you need to feel it.
You do need to feel it. And hence
because
why,
otherwise it's very plastic.
It is. But hence why you see the people who've just got it on the surface. Mm-hmm. But it is harder. And if you speak with therapists who work with children, young adults, they will tell you it is easier to work with them when they're younger than when they're already adults or, in their late teens.
We'll come back and find out whether, the teenage phase is a very difficult phase a lot of us when it comes to manners and respect and being rude. I've given up, Dr. Rajini, because I sound like a nag. So how do I now manage this naggy, perception as opposed to, telling them, what, you really need to develop these skills going forward. If you have a question for us, give us a call. The number is 03-77-109-000. Tweet BFM Radio or WhatsApp 018-789-8899. Good afternoon and welcome. I'm Meera Sivasodhi. In our Health and Living segment, Dr. Rajini Sarvanandan, our consultant developmental pediatrician, we are discussing manners, respect, empathy in our children. I think we've spoken at length about, it's interesting how you say children develop empathy even by the age of 2 years. Mm-hmm. And then after that, you need to keep it going. How much we as parents play a role in this. It's just not us role modeling. It's the environment as well that helps them build manners, respect and empathy. The gadgets and how that is becoming a huge problem in the development of this empathy, manners and respect. Because, the way the brain works is very different when they're immersed in that environment and role modeling, socialization being very important in the development of these characteristics. teenagers. Some parents shrug off children's rudeness as a face. Is that really a face, or are we creating excuses for ourselves?
Well, we know that as teenagers, you know, the brain changes again in response to the surge in sex hormones, etc. And they become a little more impulsive in terms of their behaviors, in terms of what they say. And, you know, that's the time where they want to start experimenting, where, you know, inhibitions are not quite there, and you know, that's the norm. And you know, we talk about teenagers being rude, but I think one thing we know is that if you've had the right exposure as a child, if you have a solid foundation, you quite often find that the teenage years are less rocky, and there's, you don't see that same issue. I mean, some of us may have children who very well behaved as young children.
Yep.
And suddenly, as teens, they've become this...
A rebel.
Yes. So you have to look at why that is, you know. It could be peer pressure. And that's a really strong factor, really, when they're teens. And they turn more to their peers when we push them away as adults at home. So the more we do the don'ts, no, you can't, why are you like this, you know. So in a sense, parenting has to change again. And we have to start being a little bit more flexible to keep those bonds. So we keep that solid foundation where it is. Because once you start breaking those bonds, once children feel they have a lot more pressure coming from the home, or even from, you know, having to maintain grades, etc., they turn to their peers. And if they don't have a good bunch of peers, then that will affect how they behave and what happens to them as they go on into being adults.
Okay, we have Van on the line. You have a question, Van.
Yes, good evening. Good evening, Dr. Rajni.
Hi.
I have a very simple question. I have a niece. She's a toddler. She's only 7 months old. And it's been believed that my sister-in-law says that toddlers should not watch cartoons or listen to music. That will affect their growth and their way of thinking. And is it true? Is it because I was not brought up that way?
Okay. Thank you very much, Van. Thank you for that.
Bye-bye.
So, you know, I think we talked about that a little bit earlier. It's not to say that they should not watch cartoons, but... You know, choice of programs is very important. And, you know, and hence I say it's better if they watch that cartoon with a responsible adult or someone who's able to filter and point them in the right way. You know, we have children who watch SpongeBob. You know, and it's if a young toddler watches SpongeBob, you know, several hours a day, every day of the week, I think we will be able to see effects on the brain. And that's actually been shown in research. That was actually
SpongeBob.
A study.
Who would have thought?
But you also need to look at the, you know, again, it's that balance of... are they just learning from that TV, or are they having enough social experiences outside in the real world mm-hmm. as well?
Yeah.
And it's that fine balance. And hence why the Academy of Pediatrics in America came up with the guideline of 1 to 2 hours of appropriate programs for your child on the screen. And if possible, with the guidance of an adult. So I think that's important.
Okay. It's interesting how you say you can deprive them. Okay, say you deprive them of the television and everything else, but you don't socialize them either.
Yes.
It's not going to work.
Not going to work.
Yeah, it's got to be both.
Yes.
All right. How different is a teenager's rudeness or manners and, you know, respect being compromised? Different from a preschooler, for an example.
So for many preschoolers, it's still that learning process. Sometimes they may come up with words and behaviors as a result of what they have seen around them, and they rely on the adults around them to guide them on what's appropriate and what's not appropriate. Classic example is toddler gets, you know, a preschooler gets bitten in school by a friend, he gets so angry, starts biting his little sister at home because, you know, maybe in school the teachers haven't been reprimanding the child who's been biting, or it's been happening to them so often they think, ah, this is one way I'm going to get my way with my little sister, so I'm going to bite, you know, or this is one way of me getting attention. So, you know, it's different from the teenager, for example, who starts using swear words, in the sense that quite often the teenagers will do it because they think it's cool, because my friends are using it, so what? It's the in thing, you know. So in a sense, it's that rebellious phase as well. And they're also testing limits. So in some ways, we say parenting a teenager in some ways is like parenting a toddler all over again, except you get a lot more of the comebacks and the rebelliousness.
How do you, you know, start sounding less of a nag?
So, Mira, I think you have to look at how your teenager behaves in different social settings. It could be that they're doing it on purpose with you to wind you up. Because it's fun seeing me getting all worked up. I'm getting that attention that
I
want.
Taking notes.
You know, I sometimes I hear my kids arguing at home and you know, and then, but when I go to school on parent-teacher day and you get these glowing
such
reports.
Such angels, absolutely.
And you think, gosh, why can't it happen at home? But I guess there must be some release time as well. So if you're getting those sort of reports, that's telling you that, okay, they know how to control their behavior, because it will come out somewhere, you know, if it was truly a problem. And you know, it's important to maybe get feedback in from different settings as well.
You know, somebody said to me once at 9 years old when my eldest decided to for the first time decided to be rude, and I was shocked, you know, and she said to me, she's just expressing. Mm-hmm. How much of it is expressing? And then when do you come in and say, you know what, you got to stop expressing now? How do you manage that?
So I think you have to look at it contextually. You know, if it's something that's just started happening, try and maybe look into why. Is it because it's something to do with her friends? And this is where, you know, I think it's important to know who their friends are. Is it to do with her just releasing tension at home because, you know, it's an effort in terms of putting in the effort in terms of academics, behavior in school? If it's happening all the time, 24/7 with you, then maybe you need to start sitting down and talking to her about, you know, what's acceptable and what's not. If it's only happening periodically, then it's still important to have that chat. But, you know, rather than saying, you know, with kids, I think nowadays, the more you say no, the more they want to do it.
Yeah.
So why don't we find a way to say, okay, why don't we try these alternatives instead of that, you know, as a way of expression or so.
Your advice?
You know, I think it's very important to be mindful about what we expose our young children to. And whatever it is, their role models, whether it's parents, friends, teachers, you know, we forget about teachers. They are very important role models. They expect the pleases and thank yous. But then you hear them yelling at the other kid who hasn't come return their homework. That sort of cancels out the please and thank yous that they used before. So, you know, I think the adults around need to be mindful and be good role models. And, you know, try and have more real life experiences. Do people watching, you know, why is that baby crying? Or why is the mummy doing that to the baby because, you know, he's feeling sad? Do a lot of that. If you feel that your child lacks empathy or manners.
It's important, huh? Okay. Yeah. We have Sam on the line. Sam, I'm going to take your last question.
All right, thank you. All right, I have two sons. One is 4 years old, the other one is 1.5.
Okay.
So me and my wife, we've been letting them watch TV since they were little. Mm-hmm. And I don't know, the 4-year-old seems to be, quite rude now. He's been hitting me and his mother, to in tantrums. Is there any connection between these two, and how can I combat this?
Okay, so there may be. The tantrums may be a form of attention seeking. The language he uses may be what he's been picking up from the television. My thing is, start by spending more time with your child and reinforce a lot of positive behaviors. It may seem that he's rude all the time, but I'm sure somewhere in there are little things he does that may be positive, and reinforce those. And, you know, do a lot of play together and try and model, you know, through play, like sometimes when you play police and thieves and you hear all that cartoon language going on, don't stop the play and say, no, you can't say that. Why don't you try to model words that are acceptable to you and use that with your child? So a lot of role playing together, because at 4+, they often do like role play games and things like that. And you seriously do have to start looking at what programs your children are watching, what channels they're watching. At 4.5, Disney XD might not be appropriate. Nickelodeon, sorry if I'm saying the wrong things on air, Mira. But, you know, you have to watch the language in the cartoon. So watch TV with him and see what you think is acceptable and not, and start putting locks on your channels.
2 years or 2 hours a day, you said?
Maximum 2 hours a day of any screen time.
Okay. Yeah. And don't forget the socialization.
Yes.
Thank you very much for your question, Sam.
Thank you.
Thank you. Bye-bye. One last question, Dr. Rajini. Is manners all about saying please and thank you?
No. And manners is also the tone of voice. It's also the type of words you use. You know, it's hard, you know, because for some people, the way they've been brought up, they might not think they have bad manners, but it may be to another person, yep. You know. So we have to be mindful of the fact that we can't always expect everybody to have the same level of manners. And always remember, just because you're teaching an 18-month-old please and thank you doesn't mean he understands the context of it. He may only understand the context of it when he's 2.5, 3 years old.
Okay. Thank you very much for joining us today. Dr. Rajini Sarvanandan, consultant developmental pediatrician on respect, manners and empathy on The Bigger Picture, BFM 89.9.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my or find us on iTunes. BFM 89.9, the business station.